So if you're in a room or in a place where there's a cacophony of noise, and there's one more noise added to the cacophony, you might not notice, or it might just seem part of all part of the same kind of assembly of noises. But if you're in a quiet room, quiet place, maybe a silent place, and add the same sound, that sound will stand out and highlight. If you have a rag that's full of stains, one more stain might not be noticed. But a clean rag, a single stain will stand out. So often in normal life, we have a lot of different things going on. A lot of thoughts, concerns, lots going on in our body, in our emotions and feelings. And it's easy to even feel quite fragmented by all the things happening. And some of the little things that pass through, we hardly notice. Might be driving someplace and all kinds of important things to think about and concerned about and radios to listen to and just lots going on that day. And someone cuts you off in traffic and, you know, you swear at them and, but you hardly notice because you're just on to the next thing, just kind of one little blip and a lot of things happening, and this is a small thing compared to all the big things you're concerned about. But here on retreat, things become simpler. Less is happening. Less you have to do, less that you have to think about. And as things get quieter, simpler, and as things start standing out in highlight, a thought, a feeling, a pattern, an event. And sometimes something happens on a retreat and it gets magnified in importance, way out of proportion from what we would normally do in life. And partly is that there's nothing else going on, and so it gets highlighted and magnified. And all the inner forces that we have, concerns, sometimes are not interrupted by all the different things happening, so they get all channeled and concentrated, and things can loom really big. And there's a kind of an intimacy that can happen with oneself because of this kind of quiet where what's happening with us is seen more clearly, or more in touch. Sometimes it can be quite precious. And as things get simpler and quieter, we can say that we begin to enter the stream of the present moment, of how things unfold in this little short span of time that we call now. And this is the only place we really are, is here and now. It's the only place where we live. And this wonderful, amazing miracle of life, to really experience it, it has to be in the present. The lived experience is always here and now. And at some point it can seem a little bit pale, like a virtual reality, to be thinking about other times and other places. Kind of pale or two-dimensional compared to the lived experience of now. And we're in the present moment, in this river or stream of the present. And things move and change. The breathing comes and goes. Thoughts come and go, feelings come and go. The day comes and goes. Hunger comes and goes. Meditation experiences come and go. Some reoccur, and it gives us a chance to have some wisdom about their reoccurrence. A common experience for some people on retreat to do multiple retreats is that the first retreat, maybe, they could follow some pattern, like the first day is all excited and wonderful, and it's great to be involved in a wonderful world religion like Buddhism, and finally be close to the truth and sitting quietly, and so wonderful and inspired and ready to tell all your friends to go and retreat. The next day the tiredness comes, and a headache, and it's so hard. And you wonder, what mistake did you make coming on retreat? And certainly the people, everybody else, don't know what they're doing. This is pointless. And the next day, settle in. And it feels kind of cozy and nice to be here. Oh, I could do this for a long time. Next day, the back hurts. The next day is concentrated, the next day is distracted. And on the first retreat, every one of those stages seems like a big deal. Make all these conclusions. This means everyone should go on retreat. This means that I should plan something different next year. Whatever. But if you do a number of retreats, then one of the lessons that you learn is, in fact, things change over time on retreat. And they take different patterns, different sequences at different times. But there's the wisdom of change, the wisdom of things are always changing. And so we end up taking things lighter, less inclined to make grand conclusions, less inclined to make, to define ourselves or take it personally what's happening. It's just what's happening now. And you've been through some of this before, or been through the pattern, you know that there's a, things keep unfolding. And so one of the really great pieces of wisdom in practice doesn't come from having some special experience, but comes from recognizing how much things change. And you hold it lightly. You're less troubled by it, or less grabbing onto it, less aversive. And that's quite a significant movement, to begin holding it lightly, loosely, to not be so reactive to it, and not have whatever is happening to us be the trigger for reactivity, judgments, desires, using it as a basis to define ourselves, taking it personally. It's just phenomena rolling through. They come and they go. Now this, now that. And it isn't that we just kind of then just float along with whatever's going on. But what happens is then the mind is not interfering so much anymore with our ability to really see, penetrate, concentrate on the present moment, to really settle in, just to catch the wave of the present moment and surf along, be here. Now one of the things that becomes, and what I'm trying to get to here today, is the idea that as things become simpler and quieter, as we see more, hold things more lightly and allow the present moment to flow more smoothly, more easily, it'll happen that there's something in our experience which is not flowing so smoothly, that there's some congealing or hardness or something. Maybe there's a lot of things feel soft and flowing, but maybe there's a tightness in the belly or a lump in the throat or pressure in the head, or there might be a feeling, emotion, in the heart or in somewhere. It doesn't seem to be flowing. It doesn't seem to be arising and passing. It's just there. And this is a little bit like having a quiet place and then becoming aware of the single note that's made. So as we get settled more and more, something will stand out and highlight that seems to be maybe a stone in the river, blocking it or resisting it, slowing it down, or part of the flow of the river, because it's cold, starts to freeze. So it just doesn't go anymore because it's frozen. Or maybe it's like someone has put lots of, I don't know, jello into the river. And so it kind of congeals and gets, part of it gets all, kind of still flows, but it's kind of all thick and gets stuck on as it goes down the river. And these places that seem to stand out, a simple way of talking about it and classically in Vipassana is the experience which is predominant. And then one of the instructions is to bring your attention to whatever is predominant, whatever is the strongest experience of the moment, and settle your attention on that. And one of the ways I like to think of that is some things that is to bring your attention to it and just get to know it. Recognize it, feel it, be with it. And the image I like is that of taking my cupped hands up underneath and hold them together and then hold the experience in a generous, kind way. It's like this now. Explore it, feel it better. Sometimes by really being with something clearly, something begins to loosen up maybe, or we start seeing that in fact it too is a shifting, changing phenomena. And then our relationship to that can change because we see, oh, it's shifting and changing. Or maybe it doesn't change, but it gives us an opportunity to see all the different ways that we're relating to it. The attitudes we have about it being there, the judgments, the desires and the aversions, the conclusions we tend to make. Sometimes that's where the greatest learning is. It's not in seeing more deeply the particular experience, but rather the relationship to the experience. And allowing the relationship to become cleaner, easier, open-handed, open-minded, open-hearted, just being with the experience without anything extra. Just this. Sooner or later, you might become aware of a particular kind of congealing or pressure or freezing or rock in the river that can be, that relates to the, or fits under the category of self. Me, myself, and mine. Maybe you're having a very good walking meditation. You're really present and enjoying the walking meditation. And there's no problems in life whatsoever. Just come back to the meditation hall one step at a time and feeling so nice, this delicacy of one step coming down and feeling the hardwood wood and the pressure to shift weight and what it's like to lift the back leg up off the floor and just feel like, oh, just the simplicity and delicacy of just a step. You'd never known that a step can be so interesting. Just taking a step, that's all, just a step. And you keep looking forward to sitting down and meditating. And you have it made now. This is going to be a great meditation session. Nothing will disturb you. And you come into the meditation hall, and lo and behold, someone's sitting in my seat. My seat. And that sense of my seat is a congealing, is a concentrating, is a kind of, you know, a rock, a freezing up, a tightening. And that can come, and that sense of my seat comes together, comes along with many other things. History of how people have treated you. All the people have disrespected me. Or you can come along with, you didn't realize how much self-identity, how much you've taken personally your wonderful walking time and your meditation, how deep you thought you were. And my meditation is so good. My meditation. And I am on the brink of enlightenment. And this person just ruined my whole retreat. This person is the cause of me not becoming free. I was about to know how to be free in all circumstances. I could feel it, just on the brink, where nothing was ever going to bother me again. And this person made it impossible for me to. My meditation, my seat, my retreat. And this is all a congealing. And it's possible to feel that congealing. It's possible to feel that tightening or that hardness. Mine. And then it's possible to hold it. Be aware of it. And you can be aware of it with embarrassment and anger, or you can be aware of it openly and cleanly, and just, oh, this is what it's like to take something as mine, to identify with things, take possession. And this is what, and what's interesting then is to study what it's like for, you get to do inner study for yourself, what it's like to be a person who's taken possession of a seat or a retreat or an experience. And what happens? What's the experience? What's the real experience on the inside of doing that? No need to judge it, but what's the experience like? Is there any tightening or congealing? Is there a center of energy? What gets activated? What happens to the thoughts and the emotions when that happens? What kind of motivations operate? Do the thoughts get faster, stronger? And then to cup your hands and of awareness and hold that from beneath. Just be aware of what that's like. And then you're sitting quietly, minding your own business. And things seem pretty quiet and steady. And then you notice that there's a little bit of a kind of a teeny pressure. Maybe in the chest, a little heaviness maybe. And everything else kind of is quiet and flowing, but there's this one place of pressure or heaviness. And so you bring your attention to that and feel it for a while, and then maybe you discover that, oh, that place, that seems to come along with this idea I have that I'm a good meditator. I'm a good meditator. Actually, have to have that thought comes along with a little kind of congealing, contracting. And then you think, you know, I think you're not supposed to take things personally on Buddhist retreats. So I think I'm a bad, now I'm bad Buddhist. And now there's more contraction and tightening. And now it's in your shoulders. It's fascinating to watch how this happens, this play. To see it, how it works, to study it, to be interested in it. To be fascinated by this. It's such a human thing. It's not like a personal fault that you're taking things personally. There are 6 billion people on the planet who are doing that all the time. It's a pretty human thing to do. But to study it and see how it operates is a kind of very few people do. And the advantage of seeing it and looking at it is then we maybe hold it more lightly. We don't take it so seriously. We don't automatically live that way as if it's true. It's more like a hypothesis, you know, or a theory, or it's a just a thought, you know? So there's many ways in which we define ourselves, I am. I'm this way, I'm that way. Sometimes people live apologetically, or they live hiding, hoping no one can see what's really going on. One of the great things about really taking refuge in the Buddha Dharma Sangha is you no longer have to apologize for yourself. And you no longer have to prove yourself. This movement to prove yourself or apologize for yourself or you know, it just, these are all just kind of this contractions, tightening in the river, freezing of the river, interruptions in the flow. And some of them, you know, are pretty deep-rooted rocks in the river. Things that have to do with self-identity. Feeling that we're somehow unworthy or wrong or guilty, or that we're the only ones who's not getting it. There are people who come to retreats and they're convinced that they're the only one who doesn't belong here. It's interesting as a teacher to get a series of people in a row come in and say, I believe I don't belong here. I'm the only one. I should put them together. But it's a very different way of looking at this selfing. If we don't take it so seriously, but see it as a human phenomenon, this is what the mind does. But see it as almost a physical contraction, a physical movement of the body and the mind. That slows the flow down, slows the river down, or interrupts the river. And that it's something that calls for our attention. As I said the other day, awakening beckons us within everything. So that means also your sense of self and how it operates. Even there you can find awakening. Turn towards it. Feel it. Be with it. Be mindful of that. So a very important part of this process of vipassana is not the growing edge of your best possible meditation experience, but rather where the wind drag is, where the resistance is, where the blockages are, and stop and be aware of that. So, but you don't have to go looking for it. It's kind of like just stay, you know, notice what's predominant, notice what's hard or strong or what isn't flowing or changing, and then bring your attention to that. Be with that. Hold it compassionately and kindly and openly. So one of the forms of taking things personally or defining ourselves is filling out the sentence, I am X. And what's kind of fascinating in the teachings of the Buddha, that he certainly pointed out that I am X is just wind drag, it's just resistance in the river. But he also said that the very, even without finishing the sentence, you're already beginning to slow down the river or freeze the river. Just a sense of I am. And sometimes it can be very simple and sometimes very meaningful for people to drop all the labels, all the ideas of who they are, and just sit there and feel the emness, just am. It's a beautiful thing to experience, and so in its own way, kind of liberating. But if you really stay, if you at times when you're really settled and concentrated, really stay with that feeling of emness, you might discover that too is slowing down the river. That too is kind of a congealing, hardening, something. Maybe it's the way it hardens, it's like, maybe it's really sweet jello, that's why it's so nice. But it still, you know, it interrupts the flowing. And then the Buddha also talked about more metaphysical ideas of this is my soul, this is the true self. So it's a little bit different than I am, you know, this way and that way. But this is the true, this is the essence of who I am. And one of the interesting things to notice here is that generally there has to be activity in the mind, thoughts, impulses, motivations. The mind has to be doing something to formulate any kind of idea of self, any kind of idea of this is mine, this is who I am. It's a mental activity. And because it's a mental activity, it doesn't have to always be active. It doesn't have to always be on. And it's possible to let that mental activity of selfing become quiet and kind of take a vacation, rest. And it's possible to look through the eyes into the world and not see it, the world, in relationship to myself. Just see. It's possible to go down to supper and look at the layout of food that's there and not immediately start thinking about the food in terms of self. I wonder, oh, that's not my favorite dish, or that's really good. Is there enough for me? There's a long line. Will there be enough for me? And I just keep an eye out on the person in front of me because they usually take too much. And I wonder if I can sneak around. Or I wonder if I can, you know, if I mix those things, then I can get it a little bit better. And you know, how's this going to help me in my meditation? Calculate. And it's immediately goes into this reference point. It's all about me, myself and mine, the food. Which is reasonable. We want you to eat it. But It's also possible just go in and look at the food and not have any automatic feelings about me, myself, and I in relationship to the food. It's just food and color and just kind of stand there and no self-reference. Possible to sit and meditate. Be aware of breathing and sounds and sensations and thoughts and feelings. And for there to be no self-reference to just phenomena that's rolling through. And it's possible to have self-reference, not just one, but maybe a dozen, for everything that occurs. Everything that occurs, it's like through the filter of what's in it for me and how does it relate to me and who am I in relationship to it and what does it say about me and what do I have to do with it. And occasionally when I meet with people, and first I'll say that it has not happened on this retreat. So all of you don't think, oh, he's talking about me. So it hasn't happened, but occasionally I talk with people. And it's fascinating to hear how much the word I keeps occurring in this, as they talk about I, just really, you know. And everything is, you know, and they're talking about reasonable things, but it's I. And sometimes I think the most compassionate thing or helpful thing I can do is point that out. Do you realize how much you use the word I? It's all self-referential. It's not wrong to do that. So it's really nice that in Buddhism there's no sin. I think it's great. And I also think in Buddhism there's no obligation. So you don't have to even, you have no obligation to be a good Buddhist, and no obligation to get concentrated and get enlightened, and you're not a bad person if you don't do all this. So it's very nice. So you don't have to worry about all the things you see when you're meditating. Just let it be. Just see it. So you might see a lot of self-referencing. And the practice is partly designed to help you to see that. So it's not a fault that you see it. It's actually for your benefit to start seeing how this operates. So you can begin to settle it, or relax it, or let go of what isn't necessary. Or give it a vacation. So if you watch a breath, I mean, I've sat down to meditate, taken half a breath, and then, how am I doing? Am I there yet? Was that the right breath? I better do it better. I bet the person next to me is a better breath than this. I better not show them. I don't know. You use all this immediately. It's like, kicks in right away. Or it's possible to somehow, just because we trust so deeply, we're willing to kind of just be. Willing just to kind of be simple and just to be, just to breathe and be alive. And we can allow each thing that we're aware of the gift of it being itself. And it's possible that it isn't that I get liberated. It's possible that what's happening is you're liberating everything else from you. Everything else finally gets relieved of you seeing it through all your desires and sense of self and what's in it for me and who I am. And I mean, reality will be so relieved when it's just left to be its simple thing. A breath is just a breath. A feeling is just a feeling. A sensation is just a sensation. A thought is just a thought. Without needing to slow down the river with me, myself, and mine. And the so-called the deeper the meditation is, the more and more subtle and refined is the little, teeny little ways of congealing, of kind of condensing. Little places of hardness or pressure, just a teeny bit left. And this is, it might be a lot of feeling of well-being. And, and we're not really inclined to even notice that, but there might be still a very subtle feeling of, I'm the doer, or I'm the knower. And so we see that. Infinite patience. Nothing's a problem in mindfulness. There's nothing to be in conflict with. There's nothing that needs to be seen as a problem. Nothing that needs to be... It's always something to see more clearly. It's always something to open to. It's always something within which awakening beckons us. Come here and know this. There's freedom to be found here. So one of the reasons then that we have a silent retreat like this, where we don't have a lot of activity going on, we sit and meditate and maybe calm down and quiet the mind, is so that rather than having a cacophony of experiences happening, we start being able to be present for a single experience as it happens. Just this. Or we're able to turn our attention and hold and be present just for this. Feel what's going on. Be with it. Be present. Recognize. And as we do this, in its own time, in its own way, you don't have to go looking. One of the experiences that will now stand out as a rock in the river, as a place that's not flowing or not kind of relaxed, not at ease with it, has to do with self, me, myself, and mine. How you take things personally. How you define yourself by things. And then to be aware of that. If you take things personally, it's best not to take that personally. It's just taking things personally and hold that, be with that. And sometimes you might be able to shift and not take things personally, not use the I language. Probably maybe some of you had this experience that sometimes shifting the language of discomfort from my pain to the pain can make it really make a big difference in how we relate to it. Some people find when they say my pain, they relate to it that way, it's kind of oppressive. But if it's the pain, there's kind of openness around it, not so much contraction around it. So from time to time you might discover the freedom from self in small ways, big ways, that's possible. And the final thing I'll say, the emphasis here on this being mindful of how we congeal and contract around self, the emphasis is on the congealing, the contraction, the way the flow is interrupted or slowed down or frozen. That's all. It's not meant to be a conclusion. That's any kind of idea that somehow diminishes who you are or somehow says that you don't count or you don't really exist after all or It's starting to notice the ways in which we limit ourselves, or we are in fact diminished by some of these self-concepts, and we can experience it directly. And that to let go of that is to not diminish ourselves further, but it's a certain kind of enhancement, become bigger. But it's not the kind of bigger by it's kind of like a bigger but and being empty, or bigger but not here, a certain way. And so in this Buddhist tradition, the people who have done the most work of dissolving the rocks in the river, dissolving this kind of idea, ways of taking things personally or grasping onto self, they're called noble ones. I think, as I said earlier, it's a beautiful title, beautiful term. They talk about the dignity and value of a person, strength of them. I think it's a beautiful recognition. I think there's inherent in the Buddha's teachings a profound respect and sense of valuing of human being and human potential. And to let go of selfing, let go of taking things personally, is to discover strength, confidence, nobility, dignity. We can stand in this world unapologetic, without needing to defend ourselves or prove ourselves. And that we have the capacity to stand in a certain way, kind of upright on our own two feet, and just be here, now. So let's return to the river. And you can let the river of the present moment just flow right by. Or you can notice the places where it gets held up.